You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reformed book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur.
All right, cool. So we're recording, and we are recording with Noelle O'Ryan, who is one of our favorite authors. And I like to call her the snark queen, because that is a talent that she definitely has down pat, and it comes through in all of her books. So, Noelle, welcome to the podcast today. We're super excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. So excited. It's so good to see all of you.
You know what? It's good to see you actually too. See you. Yes. And we're going to get to see you in person next year. Like for reals.
excited.
I am super excited. So we'll talk about that really, really quick. Noelle's going to be one of our... called the kids table, but it's the rising stars authors at Charm City Romanticon in 2024. She's one of our great eight rising stars, and we'll finally get a chance to meet her and hug her, unless you're Susie. Susie's prickly. She doesn't do hugs. But everybody
I'm
else.
A little prickly, but okay. when the occasion calls for it, I'm on board. I'll be ready.
Okay, good, because we're all kind of huggers. And it's been a long journey, so we're gonna demand hugs. But anyway, so we are talking today about all things Inferno and things leading up to it. And people know who we are. We're the Stalker Sisters. We love to talk about romance. Noelle, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you write.
So I'm Noelle O'Ryan, and I am a baby author. So just a few books out on the shelf, but it's growing by the month. I write contemporary romance, but I like to call it rom snark, so not necessarily rom com, but just a little bit of sass with your romance.
A lot of sass. There's no little bit about it. There's a lot of sass in those. I love the way you write your heroines. I love the way you build in the snark. I love the way the sarcasm comes through, but it's not this overwhelming sense of obnoxious. It's just the perfect level of I want her as my best friend.
So that's what I'm always doing. I'm always writing my female main characters are always the ones I want to hang out with. So that works out pretty well.
Yeah. Truthful, but not mean.
Yes. Yes. Some a lot of, self-deprecating humor in them sometimes, insecurities that we all see in ourselves, which is why we love them, because I think every one of your heroines, it's late, y'all. I haven't had enough tea, apparently. Every one of your female main characters that you've written is someone who I'm like, okay, I can either see myself in them or know someone who's like them. And there's a lot of reality built into your characters, which makes them really beautifully relatable. And that's one of the things I absolutely love about them. We're going to talk a lot about that. And I know you're a baby author. We get that. But... we're talking a little bit about how we found you. I knew you, I think, before you wrote the first book. We were friends in a book group and found each other in a book group. And I think that book group is Julie's fault, to be quite honest.
I don't know. I think it's Janice's fault, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Janice probably really is a little bit at hand here.
100%. So, Julie, how about you? How did you find Noelle?
Janice's group.
I guess we all came across her. Ron, what about you?
I think I met her in Janice's group, but I met her as an author because you threw her book at me. And I just want to comment that six books really almost doesn't make you a baby author anymore.
Adolescent author? Is that a term?
Yes.
Yes.
Emerging. I think the word is emerging. Yes.
Emerging. I like that.
I love that.
It's very and sophisticated. That's not usually a word I
like. I like that. Emerging author. Yeah. And I have five of them. I don't have Inferno yet. So I thought about printing out a picture of the cover and then like plastering it on a different book. But I left Second Chances up because Second Chances relates to Inferno. And I figure that way at least, and it's purple, which is my favorite color. So that was a good one to have up there. So, Susie, we were just talking about how we found Noelle. How'd you find Noelle?
It was in one of the reader groups. I think it was Janice's reader group.
I think so.
I think that's pretty much what we all surmised.
That was a big catalyst for me. So, that's where kind of it all began anyway.
Talk about that. How is that group a catalyst for you? Talk about that.
So, you know, 2020, the pandemic, we're all at home, trying to figure out what the world is like. I've always been a really big reader anyway, but I just needed something else. That I'm an introvert. I could stay home all day long, not talk to anyone if I don't have to. But that was just a time where everything was just so squirrely that I needed interaction with other people. And I'm reading through, it was Hagen, and I find in the back of the book, you know, Janice's readers. And I was like, let's check it out. Let's see what's going on. And I was hooked immediately. You know, I'm a huge fan now, especially, but she's just so authentic. It really just hooked me in because, you know, there's no frills there. There's no fake. And everyone in that group really just resonated. And that's what I was like, you know, I've always been a little bit of a writer. There's probably really embarrassing notebook stacks of things that I started that didn't turn into anything and no one will ever want to look at. But I just found that drive again to create and to find that community really just built that.
I love that.
Every author has notebooks that will never see the light of day. There is not a single author out there that doesn't have those stacks and stacks.
And I have to think that they're bones of a story that probably need written. They're just
that's where Second Chances came from, because Second Chances was going to be my first book. It was the very first manuscript I wrote, and I actually lost it when we were moving. I had it saved on a flash drive, and the flash drive ended up in the trash. And so I really, it was really devastating once we moved and I was, you know, ready to start over. So Second Chances is actually its own second chance, because it was going to be the very first book, and that's not where the road took me, but it did end up coming through. So thankful for that.
I love that.
There's always stories about the one, it's like the one that got away, and then it comes back into your mind or into your life, or you find it or you reinvent it. And Second Chances was not the first book. It wound up being the third book, right?
Yes.
And your first series, I call it a series. They're kind of interconnected standalones, which I love, because you can kind of pick up anywhere. And there's little things woven in between them where you'll see a character and you're like, wait a minute, is that? I remember. And they just kind of come back and they come in and out. But it is really unique in that you really can kind of pick up anywhere in the books that you've written and start there and then work your way forward or work your way backward. And that's unusual, because most authors, when they write a series, it's like, I'm going to start here and it's going to go here and then here and then here. But I know a lot of readers who have said, okay, well, I started with Third Wheel and then I liked it, so I went back to the beginning. And I'm like, well, define beginning.
Yes. And a lot of that is not even necessarily by design. I'm a pantser anyway. So things sometimes just work out the way that they're meant to be, I think. But it's not even by design. It's more in laziness, as I don't want to have to create a new character every time. So if I can find a way to put them together, it's kind of just worked out that way, where it's like, hey, this actually fits in this area, and I don't have to create a new backstory and things like that. So it's more lazy author than than anything intelligent design. No,
it's all intentional. The universe is like, this is the way it's going to work. We're just going to spiral it right back through to you. But yeah, claim it, own it.
Yes.
It's intentional.
Own it. Yes.
So, for all of us, I know the first book I started with was actually on purpose, accidentally on purpose. The first one that you wrote was the first one I started with. Julie, what about you?
Fourth and Long. And ooh. I was, you know, just like you were saying, it was easy to jump in and not feel lost at all. Like, I didn't even realize some of the characters were from previous books. So that was perfect.
Susie, what about you?
Accidentally on Purpose was my first one.
Awesome. And Ron?
Well, I thought that it was Accidentally on Purpose, but I went back and checked, and it was Third Wheel. And I think that it was because you handed it to me.
Michelle said, "Here, read
to
this."
Do this. Yeah, that happens a lot. I'm going both directions, but yeah, I think it was Third Wheel and I loved it. And I did go back and read the whole book.
So I know we're going to talk a lot about Inferno, but and we're going to jump around a little bit too. There was a question. See, this happens all the time.
No,
we'll get to that. Let's do quotes because I do want to jump into Inferno because then otherwise we're going to go back and we're going to go forward. So Inferno's the newest one. It's the most recent one. And we'll talk a little bit about how it's different from the others because it is different. But quotes are a great Jesus.
I'm totally leaving that in.
I swear this is not vodka. It's just
maybe it should be.
Maybe it should be. Maybe that's my problem. It's mint tea because I'm like, oh, it's 7 o'clock at night when we're recording this. And I do have to sleep at some point tonight. Totally should have been vodka or bourbon. But it's actually tea. But we're going to start with quotes because I find quotes are a great way to bring people into a story because things resonate with us. And then we're like, oh, I want to know what that's all about. I am not going to be the first one to read tonight because that would be bad. But Susie, you get to go first with quotes tonight.
So jealous of this quote.
And my family is sitting like 2 feet away from me. Tuck your pet snake away. There's work to be done.
I love it. So I'm going to follow that one up with another fantastic one-liner that I absolutely love. And it's, I get all my cardio just by pushing my luck. That was so fabulous. Ron, you're up.
Mine is. His words are a fierce alpha growl in my ear. And on a deep shudder, all the feminism leaves my body.
It's so true.
It's true. Like, there's only one other phrase that does that faster, and it's two words, and we all know what it is. So, Julie, you're next.
Down deep, he's a good man. Way, way down deep. Buried under the addictive personality, an ass you could bounce a quarter off of, and enough dark and dangerous charm to talk a saint into a walk on the wild side.
So these are such great examples of the snark factor, but the purposeful one-liners that go in, and it's just like, damn, they're like mic drops inside of a book. I don't know how you do that, but you do.
I think I write the books around the one-liners. Those come to me more often than anything. And so sometimes it's those thoughts come to me and it's like, oh, how can I make that work? Because I have to write this in somewhere because someone's going to laugh at this.
And we do.
Usually it's just
and
me laughing to myself. But
we are all laughing with you. And I pulled two others because they pulled from a little bit of a deeper well. And they're things that I love the way you filter them in to, it creates more depth. It gives you an idea of the personality. And this one, when I read it, I was like, damn. Okay, so his friends call him Danny, but we are not friends. Since we aren't friends, and he's here anyway, I continue to antagonize him. He brought it upon himself by trying to tear my door off its hinges so early in the morning. And then in quotes, you look prettier when you smile. I read that and I was like, oh, because why is that in there? I know why, but I need you to tell us why that's in there.
I mean, we've all had those moments in our lives where women are always told we should smile or we should be a certain way. And so there's nothing better than turning that back on a character, especially, I mean, Danny's probably just as much a feminist as the rest of us, but to be able to just turn that around when he was already irritated was just a great moment because you know she's just poking the bear the whole time, the whole scene, she's poking at him. And it was just one more way to be like, oh, I'm done with you.
And to make that point that we all feel seen, because I think we've all heard that at some point, you know, you're so much prettier when you smile. And it's like,
yeah.
And, you know, it's like, let me turn the volume up for you, you know, so you can really hear me. And it's that level of deep. So you have these elements of comedy which Julie and I were talking about this one day, and we were like, it's a rom-com, but it's got so much depth to it within the rom-com. And it's funny and we laugh and we snicker, but there's these moments and these lines and these scenes where it's like, that's deep, or like you're pulling our heart out, and it's still the humor that surrounds it is fabulous.
Trying to be sneaky.
But sometimes that's the way people need to hear things. You know, sometimes it's a smack across the face. Sometimes it's a splash of cold water. And sometimes it's that.
Oh.
I always say, okay, disclaimer again, full disclaimer. I do edit for Noelle, so I get to read her books before anybody else. I get the ha-ha before everybody else does. But there are times when I'm reading through a novel or I'm editing something, and it's like there's a cadence to what people write, and there's a way that a character brings out their personality in something, and there's these little tiny things that attribute to how you develop characters. And this one was just great, and I think I made a note of it the first time I read it, and I was like, I felt it, like I heard it. And it's just, I usually have a much better poker face, but his statement catches me off guard, and I fucking gasp. Jesus. Like, it's like, why does that resonate so much?
We've all had those moments where you're like, okay, don't make a face, don't react. And it's like, damn it, I reacted.
Yes, it's the humanity of it. That inner monologue it is in my head, can be really powerful. And it's something that a lot of authors don't take advantage of fully, where you can start to develop that character. So I love that quote because it really gives that depth of, she's having this conversation with herself, and not only is she trying so hard, but then she's like, shit. Her reaction's just great. All right, so anyway, now that I've done fangirling over the quotes, let's talk about favorites. I totally skipped over that, didn't I? Mm-hmm. Favorite books. So
you were anxious, Ron, to get to quotes.
I was so anxious to get to quotes, I didn't talk about books. Ron.
Favorite Inferno.
Book. Julie.
It's a level up book.
I want to say it's a level up book, but it's also just different. And you did different really well. Like the depth and then the humor and the snark, it truly was. Like immediately I messaged Michelle and I'm like, whoa, this is Noelle. You know, because it was so different, but so freaking good.
Oh, Susie,
and we'll get her when she comes back. Yeah, Inferno is by far, I love all of your books. I love all of your heroines, but there was something so much deeper and so many different levels and layers in Inferno that I think I even messaged you while I was editing, and I was like, shit, girl, you have leveled up. This is one of those books. And we do talk about this in the industry and amongst ourselves, where you can tell when an author gets to that point where they're like, they're going, and then all of a sudden they jump. And then it's like that steady rise. And I've seen it in all of your books where the writing becomes smoother. You see this normally with authors. Writing becomes more fluid. Characters become more deeply developed. Plot arcs become more intense and involved. And then every author who's really intentional in their craft reaches a point where they just jump and they level up. And Inferno was so much that on so many levels. Taking us back to the beginning a little bit until Susie can come back. We did talk a little bit about why you started writing. Tell us a little bit about your intention with writing. Like, what do you personally, because every writer, every author gets something different. What do you get from your writing? Because you said, you know, you have the one-liners and you put the one-liners together and then you build a story around them. Talk about that process a bit.
My original intention was always escapism. It's the same thing for when I read. I'm always looking for things that I can fully immerse myself in. So I write the same way. I want to find myself in the story. So it's the one-liners. It's those heavy moments where you can have that inner monologue where it's a little bit, you know, a little bit funny, a little dark humor. You know, we always, we handle trauma in different ways. Mine is humor. If I can't laugh at it, I'm going to cry. And I would really prefer not to cry. so it's just things that you can find pieces of yourself in my stories, because I'm in there, and I do these things for myself more than anything, but I hope people find that aha moment for themselves. The universe gives you a lesson until you learn it, sort of things. So
does it ever?
Yes. And so finding maybe something that someone is reading this book and they need in that moment, it may not always happen, but I'm hoping that that's built in for people when they read my book.
I love
so,
that.
So this book, I'm going to jump in because yes. you answered my question early. So we all saw that this is a, not only is it a different book because it's more, there's more depth to it. And not that your other ones are superficial in any way. I just that there's just a deeper, yeah, it's dealing with deeper stuff on a deeper level. And mm-hmm. that's one way I see the level up. But what are you doing, like, as an author? How are you improving your craft? Like, are you taking classes? Are you just working at what are you doing to make that level up happen?
Sure. No classes. I'm a pantser. Like I said that earlier, I usually just kind of let it happen and see where it goes. But some of that does end up being kind of surface level. So making sure that I go back and I'm adding in the depth of character, because I really want readers to find, once again, that piece of, excuse me, that piece of maybe themselves mixed in. And so just being really intentional when I'm editing or second draft, I want to make sure that what I'm trying to convey comes through. So just the intentional authenticity, making sure that the characters seem as real as possible, even as flawed or as, you know, hey, you, that's really stupid. Why did your character do that? Well, it's the authenticity of the person or of the character. So it's just me and trying to be more honest with my writing and with myself, because, you know, those first few books, I didn't know what I was doing. And I wrote the way I thought that they would read. And they actually, on purpose, first impressions, they read the way I wanted them to, but I knew Third Wheel felt different. And mm-hmm. so I needed that depth and needed those characters to just be a little bit more real. So we're, you know, you want to be friends with these characters. And so just making sure that I develop that now, I think, is the most important part. So taking the time, I wanted to be able to write fast, and that's not something I can do. But I would rather be able to write well.
And whatever you're doing is working. So keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And talking about Inferno, Julie, you had a question about that.
Your favorite scene. What was your favorite scene in Inferno?
Oh boy. I thought about this a lot because I wasn't sure I could pick one. I finally made myself. The scene between Dante and Ransom in the bar where there's the monologue of Dante trying to decide whether he's going to knock Ransom's teeth out or not is probably one of my favorite parts, is because Ransom really wants to be his friend and Danny needs a friend, but he doesn't want a friend. And so the whole back and forth of those two was probably some of my favorite, just because it was so nighttime, daytime, you know, mm-hmm. Ransom's very golden retriever and Danny wasn't having it. Even though he needed it. So that was my favorite, was just like, you know, we all have those friends who are giving us what we need when we need it, even if we don't want it. So that was what that was.
That was another great one that had an ending line. I'm going to throw this in there. I always say Noelle has a way with the one-liners, and the first line of a chapter or the last line of a chapter, you know, your entrance, your clincher, your first line of the book, it's something that's always going to catch someone's attention. And a lot of writers struggle with starting a chapter or ending a chapter because you want it to be something that's impactful. And sometimes that just doesn't come. But those one-liners are really great sometimes. And then there's the deep lines, like at the end of that chapter, where it's just that question from Ransom, and I will never forget it, is, does he know that? And I was like, that is brilliant, because yeah. It sums up that whole scene with just the little lines and the readers going,
damn,
okay.
Yeah.
So Ron, your question's kind of a follow-up to Julie's. Yeah.
What was the hardest part to write?
So Inferno is different in, you know, depth, character, but it's also my first dual point of view story. So making sure that Dante and Shelby were evenly matched, because I want them to have their happily ever after, but they took over almost immediately when I started writing this book. I had to set it down so many times because they were very adamant in the direction that their characters were going, and it wasn't what I had planned at all. But Danny's character was so angsty and deep that I wanted to make sure that Shelby matched him, because there's nothing worse in my mind than going through all of this transition and all of this growth with your characters and then having them be a bad match at the end. So that was probably the hardest part for me, was making sure that the growth was equal so that they could grow together instead of apart.
Yeah. Which is
so interesting to me, because your first five were all written from the heroine's perspective, and they're all deep. All of your female main characters in books 1 through 5 have depth. They have great character aspects to them, and they're told completely from the female main character's point of view. So hearing that your first dual POV was you trying to match, to bring up the female main character's level to match the male main characters, that's pretty impactful. That's pretty insightful, and says a lot about how loudly Danny must have been screaming in your head.
He was very loud, and there was a point where I just wasn't sure about halfway through that I was going to be able to pull it off, my first dual POV, and I'm like, I don't think I can make them match. And I even stopped and tried to rewrite it just from Shelby's point of view, and he was not having it. It was so much that I finally told my husband, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I had these two books, and neither of them were working. So I actually set the whole thing down and finished Fourth and Long, because I just couldn't. I wasn't listening to them, and I was fighting against them the whole time. So once I was able to just let them have it and see what turns out, it worked out for the best.
Sometimes you just got to listen to your
characters. Literally.
I tell you, it just authors amaze me, just how their brains work and the characters and the stories and talking to you. And it sounds like wackadoo, but it's so fascinating.
It sounds a little schizophrenic, I know, but sometimes my friends will not talk to me, and sometimes they will.
No, that's so true, though, because you hear a story in your head, and you're trying to get it onto paper, or the screen, or whatever, and it's like, okay, they're really, really loud, and they won't shut up, and this is the story, but... And it's like, no, get rid of but. Everything after but at that point is bullshit. You have to just listen to them and understand that they're going to take you on the tail that they're supposed to. And you can guide them a little bit here and there, but ultimately they're going to have their say.
The one-liners are all me. The rest of it is all Danny and Shelby. They did their own thing, and I just wrote it down.
I love it.
What do you say, Michelle? You say something. You're just...
Writing up the incident report. Your characters do stupid shit, and you're just writing up the incident report. Yes.
I love that. 100%.
That is how good, for me, that's how good writers write. That's the mark of a good storyteller, is that you're listening to the story they're telling you, you're letting them do whatever weird, wild shit they're going to do, and then you're just writing up the incident report. I can't believe what this one did today, and you just... put it down on paper and then start to, you know, pull it together into the tale with the one-liners and joining in other characters and how people react, and then throw them into a situation and see what they do, because sometimes that's what you have to do, is just throw them in there and say, okay, now what you gonna do?
Figure it out.
Very hard to be, you know, a plotter. I tried especially with Inferno, I think, which is why I finally just was like, do whatever you want to do, you guys, because I tried to be very intentional with this one, because I knew it was going to be different. And I was like, Okay, well, hell with that. Y'all do whatever you want. I'll write it down.
It worked.
Yep.
They did not lead you astray. It worked really well.
Is Inferno setting up for a new series?
Yes. So Inferno's going to be the first. I know there will be two more for Music City Infamous series. They will all be dual point of view because that has worked out really well with this series. I'm working on the second book now. It'll be Spark, and that is Ransom's happy ever after. And he is pain. He's a bit of a pain right now. But it's gonna be a hard one, happily ever after for him.
Speaking of your books and your writing, is there anything you've experienced that you end up somehow putting into the book, or personalities, or
any of the quirky traits that the characters have is usually mine. It's just easier to write about what you know, right? But I mean, I've never been a bodyguard or a tow truck driver. But these characters all kind of have that flawed capacity of people where you want to get to know them, even though you can tell they're a little bit broken. So whether it's their trauma or just their quirky characters that I share, all of these are a little bit of me mixed in. Sometimes the good characteristics are things I wish I could foster. And so this is, maybe it's a little bit of a quantum leap for me to just try out a new thing all the time.
How do you research when you, because I'm not a tow truck driver and I'm not a musician, or, you know, well, maybe you are, you could be a musician, but you know, you're like, I don't work for a football stadium. How do you research? What's your process when you're writing a book and you're like, oh, okay, well, this is who she is and this is what she does, but I have no idea how some of this stuff works.
Well, a lot of my female characters, I like to give them jobs where it's mostly male dominated because I think that that's really important, just from a woman's perspective, to show that, you know, do anything to do. So a lot of YouTube videos, trying to be really, you know, once again, authentic in what we're doing, but just researching teams that have a female, oh gosh, it's left me, whatever her job was.
Agent.
Just, you know, having female agents, or, you know, just looking at those people specifically, because they have the drive to do those things, and just building around that.
And it's so much easier now than it was, you know, growing up. You wanted to do research on something, you had to, like, you know, go to the library, pull a book, actually interview someone. Now, YouTube is such a wealth of information. If you want to know what it's like to be a tow truck driver, you can go on YouTube and, like, follow them around for a day.
Exactly. You
know, sports agents, music agents, things like that. It's so much easier now. And it's, I think, like you said, it allows authors to create a much more authentic world, even though it's a unique position, because the information's out there. But I love that you take these male-dominated professions and you flip them and give them to women. Now, kind of a funny story,
a little side story.
I have a friend who is a female tow truck driver. She's local. She's fantastic. She's 5 foot, I don't know, probably nothing.
She's teeny tiny.
And she posts a lot about how it's very different to be a female in a male-dominated industry and how people look at you and think about you and the impressions that they have immediately. And I loved when you wrote Third Wheel and you brought in her insecurities and you brought in her doubts. But one thing she knew was her job. Now, and you always have that with the characters, is that whatever their insecurities are, they know their shit. They know their job, they know their profession, they know what they're doing. Shelby's an attorney. And even though she's a new attorney, she's still like, I can find what I need and I can make it work and I know what I'm doing. And even though she has her vulnerabilities and everything else, it's like, no, she's not going to be this, she's not legally blonde, you know, which is another, legally blonde's great, but nobody's going to look at Shelby that way. You know, she's made her mark of, this is who I am and this is how I go. And her vulnerabilities are personal. And I love that about her so much. And I love the way you write your female characters that way, because it's refreshing. It's really refreshing to see that.
Is there a specific scene that was the hardest scene in the book for you to write?
Yes. Oh, so Second Chances in the middle has a matching scene with Inferno. So they're all at Dante's release party in Second Chances. And so having to go back and make those scenes match was a literal nightmare. Because just having to have, there were so many characters involved, because Shelby and Harley and the family, and now adding in the side characters too, because you have Ransom and Reno in the room as well. So just making sure that it all made sense, but was also true to Second Chances, because I didn't want someone to go back and read Second Chances and be like, she changed all of this. Like, what is she even talking about? It was a little bit of a mess trying to just make sure that it was true to everything.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you keep a book Bible? A serious Bible?
I don't. I definitely should. No, I definitely don't. I did go back and read it, because there were a couple of spots where I wrote brothers, not sisters, and trying to remember, I'd already given Dante a family, but I couldn't remember whether he had brothers or sisters, and how did I describe the room? I don't remember, that was a while ago. And so just going back, and my notes were hilarious from that, because I'd already started trying to put that scene together. It was so wrong. So very wrong. So some of that was a major rewrite, because I was like, nope, not even close. So that was probably the hardest, was just making sure that if someone was popping in and out, because my characters do show up in multiple places, but those scenes where it's the same moment almost, but having all of that go back and forth was really important to match up. I would have probably done things differently and planned a little bit more accordingly had I known there was going to be another hack at that, but it worked out okay.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that working with an author who does interconnected backgrounds, it's, you're not alone. It's hard for everybody.
I'm sure. Yeah, I've every time I'm like, I'm gonna put a book Bible together, and that way when I go back, no, I never have to do it. But
you never have the right stuff in it anyway.
Yeah. Like, I need to know what color so-and-so's eyes are. No, I didn't write that down. Okay.
Yeah. I think our brains are like, oh yeah, I'll remember that. Yeah, no.
I use the search feature in my Kindle a lot. So I go back and forth between books, and I'm like, okay, going back to, and it was the type of thing where I was like, all right, let's go back to Second Chances. And talk about, it was like the color of the jacket or something that described his jacket. And I was like, all right, let's go back and read that scene. Was it the same jacket? Is it the same space? What does it look like? That's made it a little bit easier, but it says something a lot about an author's craft that they're like, I need to make sure this matches. Because it's easy enough to say, look, this is a new book. People are going to go back, and they're not, I don't care. But it says a lot when you're like, no, I need to know that it matches, because to me, it's important that if somebody's popping in and out, or they're reading, they read Second Chances when it first came out, now they've read Inferno and they want to go back and relive Harley's story because Harley and Chance are in Inferno, that when they go back, they have that connection and that continuity. So that says a lot about an author's craft, that they're like, no, I'm going to go back and make sure it's right, because that's not an easy thing to do, to take a scene and flip it from a different perspective, to put it in someone else's words, to make it part of someone else's life when it's already been an integral part of someone else's. Mm-hmm. And that is a pretty pivotal part of the story. So a lot of moving parts there.
Yes. And it was an important part of the story. It's where we put, all of those moments together, where Second Chances really crashes into Inferno. And so it was important to me that they find that continuity, because if someone was coming from what reading Second Chances or they wanted to go back. I didn't want there to ever be a reader who's like, that's totally different. That's not how that happened. So just for my own sanity, it was important that those made sense all the way across the board, which just made it harder because I needed that. And that's, you know, three chapters of back and forth through flipping through Second Chances, like, wait a minute, that wasn't right. Or, you know.
Yeah. No, definitely.
And I know you talked a little bit about what's coming next, right? So we know that we're getting a couple more in Music City Infamous. And there's another character that appears in Inferno who's been seen before that I'm kind of waiting for his book too. And that's Bo. So I'm going to put you on the spot.
He's been a poor guy. He shows up a lot and I think he's ready. He's getting a little loud in my head. So he's coming. I think maybe after Ransom.
Nice. Will he be in the new series or will he?
So I don't know yet. I don't know. He's very loud, so he might have to just to appease him. But I think he might be his own series at this point. I think he might. He's very loud, like Danny. So I don't feel like it would do that story justice for it to be a single point of view when he has a lot to say. So I don't know that it's going to fit into Accidentally on Purpose series like I thought it would originally, because it was originally just going to be another single point of view with Accidentally. He's very loud and very bossy. So I think he's probably going Ooh. To.
I know, right? Julie and I are like,
yes, yes. He's very bossy. So
I love a bossy man.
Yes. Yes, he's very bossy. So I think he's going to get his own.
Excellent.
So after that, after your rock stars and after you give Bo his happy whatever, whoever, wherever he ends up, what comes a year from now? Where do you see yourself a year from now?
Wherever it takes me. I know that I want to go back to Red River, to the small town story where Third Wheel was. Mm-hmm. And I believe that there are some ladies there who are going to get their own stories as well. So that's going to get its own little spinoff, pending name at this point, TBA. But I think we're going to go back and give Rusty and Lena and Cherry all their own story.
So
awesome. Now we
are super excited about something else that's happening next year. Mm-hmm. Where are you heading?
Yeah,
I am headed to Elliott City, Maryland, and I'm going to see all of you, and I can't wait.
So excited.
Is Charm going to be your first signing as of right now?
Charm will be my very first signing, yes. My very first event at all, actually. So it's a little intimidating, but I'm very excited. I was so sad missing last year's event because the pictures from everyone who I knew was there and it looked so fabulous and I wasn't there and I had major FOMO afterwards because well even during it wasn't even after because I was seeing everyone's photos. I was like, I really wish I could have been there. And so immediately I told my husband, we have to go, we have to make this happen. So I'm very excited.
We're excited that you're
and now Janice is going to be there. And now Janice is going to be.
Are you going to bring in your family? Or are they all coming?
Just my husband. He's going to be okay. my assistant, my lovely assistant. He's my emotional support husband. So between the two of us, we make an ambivert. So I feel like that's probably going to be as good as it. So between an introvert and an extrovert is an ambivert. So between, he's a little more extroverted and I'm way over here. So we're hoping to, it's going to be great. But yeah, emotional support has been.
I love it. It's
going to be great. We'll make sure that you're well taken care of.
And I think it's important for authors, you know, as you start writing more and you start becoming more involved in the indie romance world, I think it's important for you to, you know, you make connections and you get to meet fans and you get to fangirl, because that was one of the things I loved, was that there wasn't a single author who was not fangirling another author. Because like you said, you know, things started in the Catalyst and Genesis group. And for me, I would think as an author to meet someone who was influential in starting a career, who has an impact, that's pretty amazing to have that opportunity, which is why I love the signings, especially something that small. But I love that we get a chance at Charm to bring newer authors, baby authors, emerging authors, adolescent authors, whatever it happens to be, you know, into the mix with authors who have been doing this for a decade, sometimes more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to see that the networking start and the connection start and the fangirling that goes with it is, mm-hmm. is kind of a neat feeling. So what was the tipping point to saying yes, when we were like, we want to invite you to come be a rising star author? What was the tipping point?
There was no question that I was going to be there, whether it was as a reader or as a writer. So immediately I was like, yes, absolutely, because I was coming. There's so many connections that I've made in the community. I started out in Janice's group, and that's how this all whole thing started. But, you know, Coco Hart, Teresa Graysick, all of these people that I have met in this virtual world that's so interconnected, but I'm actually going to get to see them in person. And I feel like that's so important, you know, seeing Susie and Julie and Ron and Michelle and being able to have those connections, because these are people I talk to constantly in my everyday as an author and just as a person. But I knew immediately that I had really missed out on a big opportunity the first year, and I knew that that wasn't something I could pass again. I wasn't gonna miss it.
We are glad you are not missing it.
Yes, we're so happy.
I'm gonna ask a last minute question because I just thought of it when you were talking about your husband coming with you. Does he read your books?
He does not read my books that I know of. Because he hasn't ever said that he does. He absolutely is absolutely welcome to, but he is the TBR enabler for some of his work friends. So anytime a new book comes out, he's like, okay, I have to send that to, you know, so-and-so. Or they're always like, hey, let us know when the new one comes out. So it's nice that I have lots of support in him, but he's like, okay, the new book's live. I got to send it out to, you know, his work group, and they're all in there to right when it hits, they're ready to go.
I love that so much. Random rapid fire questions. This is like a this or that round. It's super easy. It's just kind of a fun way to see where we all fall on the scale with you. And we're just going to run through 10 questions. Don't even think about it too much. We're going to ask them this or that, and you're just going to answer it. I'll take Susie's. Julie, you're going to kick it off.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Bad haircut or bad hair dye?
Hair dye.
Hard rock or country?
Country.
Beach or mountain vacation? Plan ahead or live in the moment?
Live in the moment.
Morning person or night owl?
Morning person.
All
right. Cookies or cake?
Cookies.
Vanilla or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Draft or edit?
Oh, draft.
It's something on that. Okay, last one. Kindle or paperback?
Kindle.
Me too.
My paperbacks are treasures. Plus, I can't take 30 of them on vacation with me. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I wanted to just say, you said the draft versus edit. That always makes me laugh when it's someone I work with. Noelle and I go back and forth a lot within the doc, and we edit and re-edit and go through things. And last year you sent me something about a blooper reel. Like there should be a blooper reel for edits. So I kind of joke about this all the time, but it's Noelle's fault. And we're keeping a list. And so one of these days, there's going to be a blooper reel in the back of one of these books of the editing errors that we've come across, because sometimes they're really awesome and hilarious, but part of the editing process is sometimes working through scenes that, and Noelle's not alone in this, I'm not like calling you out because it's just you, where there's this scene that either starts in the author's head and then finishes on the page, or the other way. So there's kind of like this process of, oh, what happened? Where did that go? But I think we've had some of the best laughs going back through things going, wait a minute, what the heck just happened there?
Where did that come from? Where does the scene start? In my head. Why can't you, why don't you know what I'm saying?
Over time, it's kind of gotten to the point where I'm like, I know exactly where you're going with this, but...
Now write it down, please. If you could put it on the paper, that would be much easier for the readers, yes.
Please take the brain dump.
Yeah, so much of what I'm doing is, you know, I'm doing dishes and I'm thinking about, you know, where the scene's going to go. So sometimes it doesn't always make it into the document, but sometimes those are the greatest laughs that we have to do when we're editing.
When I
misspell things. I believe there was a fish through a wall at one point.
Poor fish.
In Inferno. It was, yes. There's something about when you've read something so many times that your brain just glosses over errors. And mm-hmm. I mean, I read these things so thoroughly before I send them to Michelle. And there was a scene where Danny was going to put a fish through a wall, and it was definitely a fist. And
that, yeah. That one took me a minute. Like, I reread it and I'm thinking, that's not what she meant. And then it's like deciphering what was, oh, and the other one, because you are not the only one who has done this. And I laugh every time. I think it was Danny was exercising his demons.
Yes, yes,
yes.
And
it was a play on words, but it didn't work out that way.
But it actually was pretty perfect, right? I was like, did you mean exorcise? Or because exercise actually works pretty well here too.
That's taking him for a workout.
Yes.
Take him for a walk. That's right. That's what we're doing.
Take your demons for a walk. But it worked out perfectly. And you're not the first one who's had that in there. And I just keep thinking, most of the times when it comes through, it's like, yeah, that's not what they meant. But I had to ask you if you actually meant that play on words, because you have a really beautiful way of taking a sentence or a phrase and turning it to make it into a pun that works really well. So sometimes I don't want to make the correction because I'm like, that actually kind of works here. I actually kind of like that. And telling little tales out of school here, Coco had one the other day that I read. It was scalding water instead of scalding. And I went, sister, and I
that
said,
damn water.
Right? That's a very angry water right there. It's like, we have to come up together and put this together. But I love that you said, you know, sometimes you're doing dishes. And we've had this conversation where it's like, you're doing 1,000 things because you're not just an author. You're a mom and you're a wife and you have a full-time job outside of your home. And the words will hit when the words hit. So when the words hit, you write down what you can, and you type out what you can, wherever you happen to be. And then eventually we go back through it and go, I think half of that conversation went in the dishwasher. Because only half of it made it to the page. But there's a process that you go through where you pull the words back out, where you make it part of the character, where you make it relevant, and it brings in the audience and your reader so much more. But you live a life around words, and your words and writing has to live a life around you. So that becomes a big part of that author's world. And I really commend you for taking all those things and putting them together, because it's not easy to do that.
It's not. And I know, you know, there are people who read my stories in my everyday life who they always say that they love to do that because they can hear my voice, like I'm narrating it. Because that's how I would talk through the scene anyway, or how I would advise in that moment. But sometimes there will be scenes where I think it's probably accidentally on purpose. I couldn't work out a scene, so they're actually doing laundry because I was working through the scene doing laundry. Like, okay, how am I going to make this work? What are we doing? What does this transition look like? I'm like, hell with it. They're doing laundry. Okay. Just so you can kind of move on. And it works out sometimes.
And I love that. It's taking that reality and infusing it into a situation that might be a little bit out of whack or off base, but everybody can relate to doing laundry and having a conversation.
You know,
either with themselves or someone else.
I have
a lot of good conversations with myself over laundry. So
awesome.
Noelle, thank you so much. Julie, Ron, did you guys have any other questions? Any other
last minute? Awesome.
No, I think we're good.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great. It was good to see all of you
in person.
I can't wait to see you in April.
In April.
Absolutely.
Oh my
gosh. I know Susie has the countdown now. I don't know how many days it is, but
it's got to be like
in 8 months.
2:30-ish, I think.
I got a countdown app so that I could keep track of all these things. Now I don't remember if I actually put that in there or not. Now I have to find out if I actually have. No, I did not. What's wrong with me?
You know why you didn't? Because it will cause you anxiety.
It does.
It will. But it's going to be here before we know it. And I can't wait to see you there. I'm so excited that you're going to be there and with us in person. I can't wait for the next book. And if you haven't read Inferno, you don't have to have read anything else. Inferno stands completely on its own. Of course, I will always tell people read everything because Noelle's books are fantastic. They are quick reads with a lot of depth and a lot of heart and a lot of snark. So be prepared for that. And they're great summer reads and they're great all the time reads. So just go grab Noelle's books, read all of them. But Inferno is just absolutely spectacular. Definitely one of my favorite books. I'm going to say ever. It really just hit me really hard, that one. And I loved it. So thank you for writing it.
Thank you for editing it.
245 days.
245 days. Woo-hoo! Oh
my gosh. Awesome. I'm going to be here before we know it.
And we'll have a bunch of new books by then too. So bring your signing pens and get excited about it. So, Noelle, thank you so much for joining us. We'll let you get back to your family.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for having me. So much fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you soon.